otherwise known as the guy with the squeaky chair. It's the news, according to me. Well, it's fun here. We got the news according to me. Welcome, everybody. It's Wednesday. It's over the hump day. Hump day news. It is March 4th, 7:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am your... I don't know. I'm here. I'm the guy telling you what I think and what you should think. I don't want to tell you what you should think. I'm just here to tell you how to think. Hopefully I provoke some thought, or maybe just think, why am I listening to this? How fast can I turn this off? Where's the button that shuts this guy down? Where's that at? Anyway, by the way, we're not live this morning. The attempt was going to be to get up early enough to get to the office, to get to the main headquarters, worldwide headquarters this morning, and that did not happen. Tomorrow morning, however, it's very much more likely. Today there was a few things we had going on. I figured it would or wouldn't happen this morning. It was just there's some appointments that have to happen today. My wife is not working, which leaves us to the point where we can go out for breakfast or something. So that we got to do that, and it's kind of getting in the way. Between walking the dogs, doing the chores, getting everything done, got a couple vehicles got to deal with, and always have something from the vehicles. Got to take the trash over to the dump this morning. One thing after another. So it's just not one of those days that's going to be best for me, you know, driving over there, doing that, to setting up the whole thing. I'm going to spend a little more time setting up for the live broadcast. That's what I'm going to try to do. I'm looking at my schedule here in the next for the next month. I think that it might actually be best for me to kind of plan on having live broadcasts on Thursdays. However, I think there's a Thursday that I can't do that. I might just do that this month. I might just do Thursday live shows. And I want to eventually do this on Rumble. I was going to think about doing something on YouTube. I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to do something on Rumble. Unless I start my own platform. Here again, this is another possibility. A YouTube-like channel that you can actually go to and watch live. I would broadcast or podcast directly to a live website of my own. Once that's set up, yes, other people could get on it and join it as well. And it would be set up not for content creators. It would simply be a place for people to go to be uncensored and have a channel. Now, I'm hesitant to just make it just a conservative membership channel. Some of the rules that would be a part of this thing. I'm almost at that point. Just have a place. I know it creates a silo. It creates a bubble, whatever you want to call it. Folks, the bubbles are out there anyway. I'm thinking might as well do what I got to do and just deal with, you know, people who are conservatives and independence. I don't care. You know, that's if the left wing lunatics. They're just not going to be on the channel. So anyway, it would have to be my own website. It's not going to be a Google based thing. What's happening is, especially YouTube, is censorship is on the rise again. It's weird. I thought that this was over with. This something has happened. In my opinion, it's probably something with the administration. I know at first Facebook and all these people who were running these organizations, Zuckerberg and all these guys were kissing Donald's feet initially, realizing, hey, he's going to be back in power. We better do this, or we better politically position ourselves. I think Trump saw through that. He realized these people are just here because they can get something from me. they aren't, you know, we, I don't think he's not going to forget what they did to him earlier. And, he's just not kowtowing to that. I don't think it's just, he's just going to, well, let them fall over themselves and do whatever they got to do. So in the meantime, I am a guy with, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor, but I do have a cup of chai here. I have chai with Cinnabon creamer, as well as my, I think it's probably at the peak of its goodness right now. My homemade sweet tea with peaches in it. I didn't tell my wife this. She apparently bought some peach nectar at Costco or someplace. I'm not sure where she got it. She might have got it at the local food co-op thing. They have a lot of organic stuff there. And it's, you know, as opposed to synthetic. You get organic peas instead of getting synthetic peas, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I have this cup here I put a little bit of peach nectar in my tea yesterday. And then I thought, I could just put it in the whole gallon. So I put a dollop in there. I think it just adds just the right amount of backup flavor with the actual peaches. It just kind of makes it just about right. It's good stuff. Anyway, stuff going on in the news. The Iran war is apparently kinetic action. What are you going to call the thing? Is not over yet. They're still trying to bring him to the table to negotiate. I guess this guy's this Khomeini guy had two sons, at least two sons. I guess his second son now. I think his first son is gone as well. Who was the leader who was going to step in because they have such a democratic system there that the Democrats are just love to support. They love to get behind this guy. Now, don't get me wrong here. I don't know that I'm not sure why we're at war. Why what's happening with Iran is happening. It's part of me is, you know, good. I'm glad some bad guy that's kind of in line with what I don't think he was the guy who started the Islamic revolution there in Iran. Iran was kind of a normal country at one point. Until the Islamic Sharia law thing took over. And then it became a very different country. Many people left because of that. I have a good friend I don't talk to him on a regular basis. I went through some training with the guy. And when we run into each other, we always say, you know, we're always friendly. But He was from there, and he considers himself Persian. He doesn't consider himself Iranian. He doesn't like to be called Iranian. He's Persian. Now, I believe he probably is a Muslim. I don't know. We never got that deep in conversation. He knows I'm a Christian. He never really shared anything about his faith, and I'm pretty sure he's not really a devout type person. I mean, he's not. But then. You know, I don't know. It's just so we have interesting things going on there. Now, I was just going to do the show without any kind of preparation today. That's typically how I used to do the show all the time. I just turn the microphone on. Whatever's on my head, that's what I was going to talk about, which is exactly what's happening right now. You're experiencing that at this moment. That's really something, isn't it? Yeah, sit back and just soak that in. That's the show right there. We have, all of a sudden, I have nothing to talk about. I had a little issue with the cats this morning. My wife I think she slept through the whole thing, which I'm surprised because the cats were yelling. Well, one cat was yelling pretty loudly. I've never heard him yell like that before. So I brought the little female cat stays in our bedroom all night, and the male Tommy cat. He's left out because he just doesn't get along with the dogs. So the dog and the female cat are all in the room. We keep the door closed there. And just, you know, for peace's sake. And I ended up going to get the little kitty, the little female cat, got her and brought her down and put her in the one bedroom. And I put her there with her food. Usually she sits there and eats her food for a while. Well, she likes to follow me around everywhere. She'll chase me around when I'm walking around down here. She just tries to get my feet and wants me to pick her up and stuff. So I left the room there for a second. I knew that the male cat is usually back here in the corner where my office, little studio thing here is. And came back here. Sure enough, he's laying on the little dog bed, the little dog cushion. So he's laying there. He likes to have his belly rubbed and stuff a little bit, his back rubbed. He likes to rub around the ground. And then eventually he'll get up and he'll let me pick him up. If I try to pick him up while he's doing that, he'll get mad. So I just kind of rub his back and do some stuff while he's squirming around. And I did the whole thing. And well, while I'm doing that, I didn't realize the little female cat had followed me back over here to where we were at. And of course, he saw her. And there was no stopping this. He was up like a flash. She was gone. She ran into the other bedroom down here in the basement, and she went out of the bedroom, and because I was after him as fast as a 63-year-old man can run. About an hour later, I get to the bedroom, and she's under the bed, and he's in there howling at her, wow, wow. And I get over to the other side of the bed there, and he's beside the bed looking underneath there. He's so focused on her, he doesn't see me at all. And he's, his tail's, as puffy as it can be. I reach down and I just kind of grab him, and he, in a way that he can't, turn around and bite me. And he let out a howl like you would have thought it was someone was being killed. If you ever heard a rabbit scream, that's just almost to that extent. It was... picked him up and just kind of moved him over. He was kind of frozen in position. He was so upset. He didn't even have to. And took him over, back over, and closed the door. And actually took him upstairs, put him in the bedroom up there. And he was fine. He was, all of a sudden he was fine. I'd had food up there and stuff. That's when we feed him in the morning. And he was... All of a sudden, everything was fine. And the other cat's fine too, but nobody. I was surprised I didn't get any bloody. I wasn't wearing gloves or anything. I was surprised I didn't get bit, scratched, nothing. It was a boring adventure. So, got exciting there for a couple minutes, but that's pretty much all there was. So there you go. I've been working on some projects. The whole AI world. I know I talk about this a lot lately because I'm kind of steeped in it. So if you're not interested in it, it's kind of a. I apologize. It's something I'm going to continue to talk about for a while, just because it's on the top of my mind and it's something I do a lot of. What is that? Some of the top headlines right now, I just have a lot of things going on with the Epstein, the Clintons were interviewed, Bill and Hillary, the deposition, videos are coming out with some things that were happening. It's just the ridiculousness of how, I guess the only way to explain it or describe it is just deflection, I think, is the only word that I can use to describe really what's happening there. It just seems ridiculous to me how much is they're just living in denial. In my opinion, there's pictures. There's no evidence or no public evidence. The way the lawyers are arguing about things, and the way, of course, the accusations that are flying. And they're still trying to turn this around and make it about Trump. That's now Bill Clinton came out and exonerated Trump. He said, well, I only had one conversation with him, and there was never any indication that he did anything. I'm just going to get that out there right now. He never, you know, there's no indication that he ever did anything on the island. Now, they're trying to find, they're trying to get them to admit that he was, you know, that Bill Clinton, he was on the island. I think I said yesterday that he was on the plane 19 times. 26 times he was on Jeffrey Epstein's plane. 26 times. Now, they're saying there's no evidence of him ever being on the island. There is evidence of him being in a hot tub with a young girl, and Glenn was there. I believe Jeffrey might have been there. I'm not sure who. I can't remember. This is all. Well, by the way, everything I say is all allegedly. It's all just, you know, no evidence, no proof. This is just all hearsay. It's all for your entertainment purposes. I'm just here for your entertainment. I know nothing. Yeah, I know that my chai is starting to get cold already. I think it's time to get a. I should just be using my insulated cup. Keep it. Then it stays so hot that you can't hardly drink it. That's the problem with that. But now, with the, you know, that's what the cold tea is for. I just, you know, if you get some tea and just wash it down with some cold tea, it's perfect. The perfect situation, hot and cold. Otherwise, I have to spew it out of my mouth. Yeah, I have I just want to kind of touch base on that. That kind of the hot news that's out there right now. The other things that are going on economically. I think that we're in an interesting, tedious point in our economy right now, and I don't know if this is going to. They're saying we're going to run out of missiles. We're going to run out of missiles. We're going to run out of missiles. There is a limited number of the interceptors. I think that is probably the biggest issue. But basically, what is happening is Iran is being blasted into the Stone Age. Now, my concern about, you know, it's, okay, there are some good points and bad points about what's happening right now. Some of the bad points, let's go over those right now, just in terms of geopolitics. And I'm no expert, as I continue to point out, if you haven't gotten that yet. Anytime this kind of thing happens, and I've seen it happen with, you know, the Iraq War, every kind of war there's always been a vacuum of, nobody's there to lead anything. There's the leaders aren't there. The people, the thing that pulls people together and brings people to, you know, together with a vision. When you have a common enemy, it's easy to develop unity. That happens. When we got attacked on 9/11, you saw Republicans and Democrats coming together in a way that there was a unifying effect that had on the country. We were all together looking for a terrorist behind every bush at that point. However, that is not the case right now with the situation that we're in. We have there are countries, however, that where we are the enemy, it brings unity within their country. Now, if we step out or if something happens or if we get rid of their leader or whatever happens, and then we just leave, it leaves a vacuum. This is what happened with the ousting and getting rid of Saddam Hussein. It left kind of this weird situation there where Iranian influence actually started to step in. They started paying people. Iran started paying people and actually influencing some of the insurgency that was going on there. The enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. Iran and Iraq never got along very well. Just put it that way. There's a lot of animosity. There was a big war. A lot of issues there, but the Iranians stepped in and saw an opportunity to start supporting the insurgency that was there, and so they did that. And it was though they provided them with logistics and support and all kinds of things, and that's what fueled it for so long. That's why we didn't just topple Saddam and everything was done. There was all these factions that started to break up, all these different leaders that were trying to vie for power, and who is really in charge now. You know, in my opinion, it was a very well well-orchestrated mess, because it wasn't orchestrated at all. It wasn't organized. There wasn't this idea of what now. They might have mentioned it briefly in one meeting, maybe. I don't know. It just didn't seem like there was any plan once they got rid of Saddam. It was just, okay, we're going to step in and they're going to let the people start their own government. It's not going to naturally fall into a democratic society or a republic or any kind of a constitutional. You're not going to see the Jeffersons and they're just not going to step up and start writing the Constitution. They only know one thing. And, Saddam, with everything bad about the guy, he was able to, with a strong arm, keep all these different factioning groups under control. He kept them all under his thumb. Well, once you don't have that guy there, it becomes civil war. It becomes tribal. And that's what happened there. Now, and plus it imbalanced the area as well. There was some balance because the guy was there in the area. So it was just kind of this weird mix of, okay, take the guy out. Well, now what? Now we've got the same deal happening in Iran. I think that there's a better plan. It's almost as if some of these people who are in the administration have learned from the past, and you don't have the neocons there telling, just going on about what to do there. It seems like there's a different... It's just a different mentality, different philosophy, a different, Rick says the Don Rowe doctrine or whatever you want to call it. He has a different mindset when it comes to using military force in situations like this. So we'll have to see how this all plays out. I think once it's all settled down, I think within the next 3 to 4 months, we're going to see something different. Now, Trump said something about the next 90 days. If the Iranian military can hold out for 5 weeks, there's something about that, this 5 week, 6 week period or whatever it is. Something's afoot. I think he's trying to drive him back to the table to where there's some kind of negotiation with some kind of leaders that we can recognize and somebody we can work with. There's some kind of plan. I get the feeling there's a plan here. Instead of just we're going in and taking this guy out because he did something to my, because he tried to kill my dad. I think that was a big motivation for George Bush. That was where I kind of, I felt for the guy. At the same time, I was like, this doesn't seem like it seems like it's more motivated for that. There's this whole idea of weapons of mass destruction. That seemed kind of weak to me at the time. Everybody kind of went along with it because, well, okay, we did get a 9/11 was very fresh on our minds back then. And we still had this aversion to any kind of terrorist activity. And we were kind of numbed by the whole Afghanistan thing. That's where this Al-Qaeda thing was camped out. That's where their main base was. That's where Osama bin Laden was. By the way, Bush never got Osama bin Laden after all that effort. And one of the things that always bothered me was, we lost 3,000 people on 9/11. We lost more troops going after the ones who did 9/11. And I, that bothers me. Now, they lost 100 times more, probably. But really, we also lost a lot of, it affects our economy as well. War does affect your economy. It's not necessarily for good things. The military industrial complex would have you believe that, this is stimulating our economy. This is kind of like what they do with the aid to Israel. So we'll send $10 billion to Israel. They never really see the money. $10 billion goes through a bank account that goes right back into buying military stuff. So it is a direct feed, it's a wall bounce back into the pockets of the military complex, industrial complex. We'll say, we're going to give you $10 billion for your defense. Well, you're buying your defense from us. We're basically giving you money to buy, which stimulates our economy. The problem with that is, again, it's just like printing money for anything else. You're going to falsely prop up the economy in a way that devalues our dollar. It's just, you know, it's a lesser, the best thing you can put our money into, but the best thing you can devalue our dollar for is infrastructure. If the infrastructure is built legitimately and efficiently, if you can spend the money wisely and make good infrastructure, that is the only thing, really, that I would say printing money is good for. The idea that you're social programs, it's like a consumer, kind of economy. You're just flushing it down the toilet in most cases. Now, the only social program that really should work is some kind of a safety net for people who just are, maybe you've served your country, you've lost your family, you're the only one left, and there's just nobody to help take care of you, and you have disabilities, whatever it is, and you just need help. And it's that's where, again, I have a different philosophy on this, but that's where the government probably should have some way of stepping in and to our credit as a society, we should have some kind of way of paying for that or helping with those kinds of things. The other side of that is that really is the job of the church. When I hear about these churches that have budgets that are well over $1 million, $2 to $3 million a year, and you start asking them what they do, well, what have you done for the community? We do a weekend thing where we go out, we put on a program and have a street party. We give away food and clothes. We do haircuts. We do all this stuff with this big thing we do on the weekends on this one weekend. That's great. What was the budget for that? Well, we spent about $50,000. We spent $50,000 on that. Oh, wow. And what do you do with the rest of that? Well, we have an orphanage. We provide funds for an orphanage. We have an auction every year. Provide funds for an orphanage in Mozambique. We raise about $120,000 every year for that, sometimes more. Wow. Okay. So that's within the budget. That's part of the budget. No. It's just we have the auction. We provide the space for the auction and everything, and then we have the auction. People come in and auction. They donate things and they auction it off. Oh. That's not really out of here, but that's the $2.2 million. How much of that? Do you give like 10% back to the community, like $200,000? No. We have a lot of overhead here. We got to pay the bill. We got to pay the mortgage on the building and the expansion. We have four services a week. We had to have more expansion because we need more office space for the staff. And then we have the Sunday morning, meetings, which are they take a tremendous amount of effort, because we have to have a band, and we have to have lights, and the smoke machine has to be we have to refill that every month, every week, and then we have the all the stuff that they have to do, the overhead for all this stuff, and then of course we have the small group ministry, where we have these little programs for 6 weeks. Yeah, it's a. Now don't get me wrong. I'm talking about more about the mega church type stuff. There's nothing wrong with a mega church. There's nothing wrong with big churches. Nothing wrong with the way what that happens. But I know of big churches that give back tremendous amounts to their community. They live very efficiently. They operate very efficiently. They do an awesome job. And they have all these programs. They'll have something like an auction. They'll have weekend street parties for the community. They do all kinds of things like that. They support overseas missions, and they have missionaries, and they send them out, and they support them as well. All this stuff happens in some of these churches. But in some of them, they're just blowing the money on the weekend show, because that's where the money comes in. It's this drive-through mentality in some churches. It's a cookie cutter kind of, let's just do it this way, get them, you know, get them emotionally stirred up, they'll give their money, they'll feel good about themselves, they'll walk out the door, and we can pay our bills. That's, unfortunately, that is a big part of the Western culture. It is nothing to do with, in fact, I know of some churches, personally, I know some churches that if you approach them and say, you know, I'm having trouble, I'm struggling, I've been going here for 3 years, and I'm struggling with paying my bills because I got, some family member or whatever's got whatever happening to them, and they have kind of a bad situation, they're in a bad situation in their life, and they need some support. They will turn you down at the office. What they'll say is, well, that's why you need to be in a small group. A small group needs to take care of those kinds of things. I don't pay my tithe to the small group. I pay my tithe to the big church here. And they want the small group to take care of it. This happens. This kind of stuff happens. I've seen it firsthand. And it causes me to scratch my head to the point where it starts to bleed. I don't have a lot of hair on my head. That's why it does that. Now, I don't know why I've gone off in this particular line of thought. I'm talking about social programs and how the church has abdicated its responsibility off into the government. And in some ways, I don't blame them. Well, you pay a lot of taxes. You pray to get something back for your tax dollars. It's this kind of this vicious cycle of the church isn't doing it, so the government steps in to do it. And in some cases, in my opinion, this is the way the Democrats, I think the Democrats have gone down this road big time. They consider the church, the government, to be their church, basically. If you look at the way they live their life and the way they support the things of their church, they fight passionately for government programs and government expenditures and taking more from the rich and taxing people more so they can, those evil rich people got to get their money so that we can take care of the poor people. And yet you ask any of those people who are so passionate about it, how much of your own personal money do you give? Well, I pay my taxes. Well, okay, so you're not directly giving anything to anybody. No, if I was a millionaire, though, I'd give it all away. Oh, but you're not a millionaire and you still don't give it all away. So how does that work? You haven't learned how to give with what you do have. How are you going to give when you have $1 million? I guarantee you're going to give it to somebody, you know, you want to give it to. And I guarantee you won't give it away. Bernie Sanders was that way when he talked about millionaires and billionaires. Those got to tuck these millionaires and billionaires until he became a millionaire. All of a sudden, the millionaire dropped off his statement. We got to go after these billionaires. He never says millionaires anymore because he's a millionaire. All of a sudden, everybody's a millionaire now. I have a solo camp. I have a solo camp. He got this house up in upstate New York. And his excuse for why he didn't sell it, get rid of it because it was, I think he inherited it or something. I can't remember how it happened. Through his wife's side. Has anybody ever seen Bernie Sanders' wife? Does he have a wife? I'm not sure if he has a wife. Has anybody ever seen his wife? I'm just asking. Anyway, so he inherited this house somehow. This reminds me too. It's a little side note, totally off the cuff. Believe it or not, I'll get back to Bernie and his thing. Larry O'Connor. He was doing this thing today. Mitch McConnell had a statement. He comes. Mitch McConnell was. They asked him a question. He had a statement the other day on what's going on, and they show him standing there, and a reporter asks him a question, and he just kind of gives this stupid stare look because he can't. It's like he can't comprehend anything anymore, and then they wheel him off. The funny part was that he was had a statement to make, and he didn't say anything. Anyway, it's kind of like Bernie Sanders' wife. The not that they're related. I'm just saying. And I'm not saying McConnell is Larry's or is Bernie's wife. I think you understand where I'm getting at here. So Bernie, he gets confronted about the fact that he has this $1 million home, and it's got to be $1 million. And he comes back and says, "Oh well, there's thousands of people in New York that have a summer camp. It's a summer camp. It's his summer home. He has a place where he can go up there on the weekends in the summertime. Oh, thousands of people have one. You got thousands of homeless that don't. How about you just get rid of that home and give it to the homeless people? Give that money to the homeless people. There you go. Do that, Bernie." "Well, no, I wouldn't help anybody. But the government needs to take care of that. We got plenty of billionaires here to take care of that." It's just the whole mentality that they go through. And ask him how much of his... I bet if you ask Bernie Sanders how much of his personal money he gives away to charity every year, it's probably $30. It's just the ridiculously low amount that they give is unbelievable. They want to give other people's money away. That's what they want to do. They want to be considered the compassionate ones.
"I want to be the compassionate ones. I care about the homeless and the people who don't have health care and blah, 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 blah."
Because that's all they can do. They only give of other people's money. Margaret Thatcher was right. Socialism is great until you run out of other people's money. And that's exactly what's happening.
"We're the richest nation in the world. The only reason why we can't afford health care."
Well, the reason we can... They're realizing now that healthcare costs have gone up quadrupled. In fact, the speed in which healthcare costs have gone up under the ACA legislation is four times faster than it has ever been in our society's history. So it's ridiculously high. It has, and nobody's put this together. Well, some people have put this together and understand that it is because of the ACA that we have the healthcare issues that we do in this country now. The healthcare insurance industry is off the rails, and it's the subsidization, the funding of the insurance companies directly from the government to give them subsidies. That's what I'm trying to say. I had to work around that one. That's causing the issue here because there's no direct influence on competition. It's just everything that had happened there, and they meant for this to happen. They meant for it to destroy the health. They thought it was going to destroy it sooner than it did. And we'd get down to just a single payer system because they want to tap into this money. There's a whole lot of money going into healthcare, people's healthcare. The government wants to seize and control that flow because they can direct it wherever they want to. They can, and at some point, and don't put it past the Democrats to do this because they're all chanting this to begin. There's some radical left people on the left that are saying things like this. And let me give you an example. They're saying things like we need to stop funding to anybody who voted for Donald Trump. We need to, anybody who voted for the guy needs to be put in a summer camp. They need to be excommunicated. They need to be kicked out of the country. These are the kind of things they're saying. This is what totalitarianism does. It's also what communism does, and democratic socialism, which is just a sister word for communism, something we fought against for a long time. Now, communism in and of itself, by the way, is not necessarily a bad thing. This guy the other day, he was saying, he made an interesting point. He said, all these people who want to live in a communist society, the problem is they want to force everybody into it. The idea is, why don't you go off with your buddies? There's nothing stopping you from doing this, by the way. You can go off to some town somewhere, some place in the middle of nowhere. There's plenty of places in the middle of nowhere still in our country. Believe it or not, it's not that overpopulated. Just because you drive around all the populated areas doesn't mean that it's... I fly over all kinds of areas where I look down and I can't see anything for miles. nobody. Plenty of places out there you can start a little commune with you and your buddies and see how that works out for you. Try it. Just commit to do it for a few years. If you survive. Now, the first colony that was brought here into this nation, the little unknown history thing. The first commune was a commune. They shared everything. No one called anything their own, so to speak. They almost died because people realized that, hey, that guy doesn't have to work that hard. I'm not going to work that hard. I'm the only one working hard here. I'm not going to work that hard. So the people who would work hard didn't, because they were so frustrated with everybody else having to pick up what everybody else wasn't doing. And they were all still getting the same thing. There's no motivation. Because it's great if everybody is involved and they're all just pitching in because they care so much about each other. That's not the way it works in this society, in any society. Human beings are not that way. Unfortunately and sadly, it is the pressure, the struggle of life that causes us to be productive typically. And that's out of that production, then we become successful. It's a discipline of doing that every day. It's not something that just happens on its own. It doesn't just all of a sudden, no, it's just going to happen because I show up. And that's unfortunately, and I'm not saying that's unique to any particular individual. We're all that way. Given the right circumstances, we will all become a very selfish animal. Creature. And I contend that selfishness, Machiavelli kind of touched on this, he gets a bad rap sometimes, but the whole idea that we are motivated out of selfishness, and sometimes that's not a bad thing, but typically it ends up being a bad thing. We have Adam and Eve in the garden, in my opinion, it was the whole thing there. The bottom core of everything that was going on there was selfishness. Cain striking Abel was selfishness. Couldn't celebrate with his brother. He had to kill him because he was jealous. Because he didn't get his way. It is a self-satisfying, self-gratification type thing that we're not one of us are immune to it. We're all guilty of it. Anyway. So there you go. There you have it. I guess that's my show today. I want to get back to this thing with Bernie Sanders and the millionaire billionaire thing. Socialism is not Mamdani's finding this out very quickly that there's just not enough money to go around, that you can't just tax everybody into oblivion. People will leave. People will find another way, or at some point they will fight back. Because you just can't. This guy was on the street the other day. It was a video of him. I saw it the other day. It was a video of him on the street. It was on a college campus, and he was a billionaire. Guy was mega rich anyway. And this guy said, "Oh, you make millions of dollars a year." He goes, "You should be taxed. You know, everything over $1 million, you should be taxed. You know, 70%. Everything over that you make over $1 million." He said, "Okay, well, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to make $1 million and I'm going to tell everybody to go home. I'm going to shut the business down for whatever the last 3 months of the year or whatever. I'm not going to make any more because I'm not going to work this hard for a third the money. If you're going to take two-thirds of my money away, I'm not as hard as I work to make this money, I'm not going to do that for the last. I'm just going to take 2 months off." So that's what you do. You stifle productivity because you start taking away from people. The more you make, the more we take kind of mentality. And I'm not just talking percentage-wise. That's the myth that a lot of people get into. I think, well, if you make $1 million, you pay this much in taxes. But if you make $2 million, you pay more. Well, if you pay a 50 or 40% tax rate or whatever you're paying, say you're paying $450,000 in taxes out of the million that you make. But if you make $2 million, you pay $1 million because now you're paying 50% instead of 45% or whatever it was, what my figures were there. The more it goes up, you don't just pay $900,000, you pay $1 million, another $100,000 there that you got to pay because you made that much more. I don't think that's fair. I think that's stupid. We have a graduated tax system that I think is unfair and causes people, there are people who turn down raises, which is stupid because there are ways you can get around that. You get a raise when your net income is, your gross income is a certain amount, and you can, there are things you can defer your pre-tax dollars into and make your investments better in a better way than turning down a raise. But I digress. Sometimes it's a promotion that comes along with a raise, and also, you know, now you might be thinking about, well, the responsibilities they're going to give me are not worth the extra $30,000 a year I'm going to make or whatever. I understand that because I've seen some positions where I wouldn't want to take the job just because you'd be putting yourself in a worse position. Just your life in general would be terrible. And the money, you know, it's not worth the money. And that's why they can't find, you know, management positions sometimes, because of the way they treat people. But I digress. I'm not going to go down that road. We have, okay, so anyway, hump day. Tomorrow morning, plan is around 9 o'clock. You can probably tune in to Podbean or whatever, or let me know if you have an idea out there that you think you might have a better idea of when. Shoot me a text. Shoot me a voicemail. 574-651-7685. You can call or text the show, or you can go to google.com/voice and leave a message there as well. What time? Eastern Standard Time. What works better? Will you be able to listen at 8? Will you be able to listen at 9, 7, whatever it is? I can make a really early show, live show, if you want. I'll get up. Don't tempt me. I'll get up. I'll do it. Oh, dear. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day. I will, in the meantime, see ya.